Good morning, loved ones. You are loved by God, and there's nothing you can do about it. It's pretty good news. I am very just thrilled to be with you today, and I am thankful for you as a church family to love my children so much. Kyle and Abby feel loved. So does the little one on the way. She just doesn't know it yet, but she feels so loved by all of you. I'm so thankful that you have just welcomed them, embraced them, and encouraged them. And I can tell that you are together as a church family, growing together. Jesus is the centerpiece of your identity. He's the one that we've been singing about all morning. It's been so wonderful to be able to just be with you and to worship. And it's also a wonderful thing for me to be able to learn and grow and worship with my children. To have Kyle preaching here, I listened to a number of his sermons just a few weeks ago. I used one of his sermons as a model for one of my classes that I teach our Bible and ministry majors. We listened to it together. We talked about it. We noticed the way that he builds the lesson, but also the posture and the preparation and the prayer that he brings. Those were three P's in case you didn't notice that. Posture, prayer, preparation. That's part of good preaching, right? Not really, but Those are the kinds of things I have grown in listening to Kyle, and then to be able to be led in worship this morning with my daughter has just been a special thing. It's been great. So let me just ask you, as you gather today, as we're here together, what is something in your life that you would like to be different? Something in your life that you would like to change. Something that you would love to be able to get past, perhaps. I'm imagining that all of us have some kind of vision for the kinds of people we'd like to become. And that oftentimes there's just something in our lives that seems to weigh us down. That there's just something that keeps us from becoming all that we believe God wants us to be. Whether it's in our relationships or in our own struggles or challenges with sin or maturity and growth. What is something that you would like to change? And I don't mean something about the house and the furniture or the wardrobe or something on the superficial level, but something deep in your own life. I believe that's in many ways one of the questions that we bring to today's text. I'll be preaching from the Gospel of John chapter 5. If you'd like to follow along in your Bibles, you can do that. You can follow along on the screen as well. In John chapter 5, starting in verse 1, this is after Jesus has gone through Samaria. He spent some time with a woman at a well. We know that story from John chapter 4. Then he's continued teaching and preaching and impacting people, healing people. And sometime later, Jesus went up to Jerusalem for one of the Jewish festivals. Now there is in Jerusalem near the Sheep Gate a pool, which in Aramaic is called Bethesda, and which is surrounded by five covered colonnades. Here a great number of disabled people used to lie, the blind, the lame, the paralyzed. Now, some Bibles may have a footnote to explain that some manuscript versions of this story will say that an angel would come from time to time to stir the waters in some way, and that when the waters were stirred by the angel, the first people who got into the moving water were the ones who had become healed. One who was there had been an invalid for 38 years. When Jesus saw him lying there and learned that he had been in this condition for a long time, he asked him, "Do you want to get well?" "Sir," the invalid replied, "I have no one to help me into the pool when the water is stirred. While I'm trying to get in, someone else goes in down ahead of me." And then Jesus said to him, "Get up, pick up your mat, and walk." At once the man was cured. He picked up his mat and walked. Now, there's more to the story. If you keep reading the next 9 verses through chapter 18, the man goes on his way walking with his mat. It's a Sabbath day. He gets in trouble by the local religious leaders who question what he's doing carrying his mat on the Sabbath. And he says, "The man who healed me told me, pick up your mat and walk." And there wasn't any elation. "Oh, you've been sick? You've been paralyzed? What's been wrong? And you've been healed? Oh my, that's great." There wasn't any of that. There was immediately this desire to find out who had told him to disobey the law and break the Sabbath by carrying his mat. But all of the focus really is on Jesus and the kind of things that Jesus does to break through barriers, to get to people's lives, to get to people's hearts, so that he can break through the things that keep them from becoming people who experience the full and abundant life that Jesus holds out. There's a feast on this day. We're not told which of the festivals it might have been, but there's a feast, which means it's a time for celebration. It's a time for people to come together. They're talking about all the things that God has done in the past, that he does, that therefore they're looking into the future thinking he will continue to do these things. So it's a time of celebration and remembrance, thinking about God's faithful provision, his powerful deliverance. It's a time of celebration for most people, but for some, it's hard to celebrate. And certainly for the people gathered around this pool, it's a pool of hope. It's a pool of longing. There are people of all sorts, all kinds of afflictions and diseases and sicknesses who've gathered at this pool. They make their way to the pool and they lie down on the mat. And on this day in the holy city, the celebration has the mingling of groans and sighs as people sit like this man. I wonder if they stare at the pool, if they just kind of listen in. I wonder for this man as he sits in front of the pool, thinking about his disease, thinking about his weakness, whatever it is. It's not named. We're not sure exactly what it is. Oftentimes we imagine that he's just paralyzed, that he can't walk. And oftentimes that's because there's a mat, and other places it's paralytics who have a mat. But we don't know. What we know is he's weak and sick. And he's been like this for 38 years, sitting on his mat. Perhaps others have carried him and put him there. And on this day, not only is it a festival day, but it's a Sabbath day. So he sits here, and with the others, there's not going to be much help. So even if the waters are stirred, will he be able to get in? There's no line. There's no organized welcoming committee. There's no place to come and like take a number and then wait your turn. It's worse than the DMV. You're just sitting here waiting, hoping that you see the water stir and that you can get in time. And the most significant piece probably in this little piece is that when the waters are stirred, it's those who get in first who experience the healing. The first will be first. The last will be last. And this man has been last for 38 years. That's a long losing streak. It's a long time to be hoping. It's a long time to be watching other people pile in, spill in, dive in and be healed, but not for him. It's a long time to be last. And I wonder when he sits there and he's thinking of 38 years of disease and sickness, 38 years on the cusp of healing, 38 years of almost, 38 years of not quite, 38 years of the same old status quo, 38 years of life in slow motion, of life in no motion, 38 years of stiffness, 38 years of resignation. This is just the way it is. I'll never be able to be better. This is my lot in life. 38 years is a long time to sit on a mat. It's a long time to carry it. And so Jesus comes and he sees this man and he knows, the text says, that he's in this condition. And there are things that Jesus knows in the Gospel of John. He knows back in chapter 1, he knows about Nathanael. He sees Nathanael sitting under a tree and he says, ah, now here's the true Israelite. There's nothing false in him. He knows things about Nathanael. He knows things about Nicodemus, the Pharisee, the leader who comes to him at night. He knows things about the woman at the well. Go call your husband and come back. I have no husband. You're right in saying that you have no husband. You've had five, and the one you're with now is not your husband. You've said it truly. He just knows things about people. And so we get to this text, and Jesus, knowing the man's condition and that he's been like this for a long time, looks at him and says, do you want to get well? Now, can you imagine that question? Anybody going to a hospital and walking in where there's a hospital and there's a bunch of people sick and asking if they want to get better, if they want to get well? It seems a little bit ridiculous. Jesus is ridiculous. He's ridiculous in his love for people. He's ridiculous in the ways that he wants to break into people's lives. It seems inconsiderate. Jesus is inconsiderate, but he's inconsiderate of the forces of evil and the forces of the world that keep people from experiencing the flourishing and abundant life. So yes, there is something ridiculous. There's something inconsiderate, but it's not ridiculous and inconsiderate for him to ask this question to the man at this moment. We're believing, because this is Jesus, and because Jesus knows his condition, Jesus knows what people are thinking along the way, that he knows something. Now listen to the man's response, though. What do you think he expects from Jesus? And I wonder if the man who's sitting here, I wonder if he's even looking up. What did he look like? Was he bright-eyed looking at everybody who passed by, or was he just like, just quiet, sullen? When Jesus stopped, he probably was the only one who had stopped through the day. Did he look up to Jesus? What is he expecting Jesus to do? Maybe sit beside him until the water is stirred? Maybe he's expecting Jesus to be the one who's going to help him get in first. He hasn't had anybody do this yet with him. So maybe he expects Jesus is just going to be another man coming along with some pity to help him get in, splash around, get better. But he responds to Jesus and he simply says, instead of a yes or no, I want to get well, or no, I think I like this. Instead, he says, I've tried. But I have no one to help me. When the waters are stirred, other people get in before I get in. At what point in his weakness, in what point in our weakness, at what point do you just decide it's not worth it? At what point do we finally say, this is just the way it's going to be for me? Maybe it's happened so many times for him that not only is he weak and sick and diseased, or perhaps even paralyzed in his body, but he's become that in his spirit. Maybe his will is also paralyzed. Maybe his desire to be different has now become unable to move. You know, if he doesn't try, he won't fail. Maybe he's become comfortable sitting on his mat. There's no long conversation here. Jesus just, he has none of this. He doesn't draw the man out like he does with Nicodemus, asking questions. He doesn't draw the man out like he did with the woman at the well. Instead, he just says, get up, take up your mat, and go home. In your mind, when Jesus says, get up, what does his voice sound like? Get up. Get up. What does he sound like? Here's what it seems like to me. What if he just does this? Get up. What if it's this invitation from Jesus, that Jesus just looks him right in the eye? And almost as if he's just kind of covering up this little surprise that's going to come. He just says, get up. I don't know. But it's Jesus. And if Jesus is saying this, it's as if Jesus is saying, if you want to get well, listen to me. So I want you to think about this as we think about this story. Let's kind of think about now how this is our story too. And I want us to think about two responses in the next few minutes as we put things together for today. I want us to think about the question of Jesus, do you want to get well? And I want us to think about the response, the command of Jesus, get up and take your mat and walk. First, the question. This is a question, it seems, is about desire. Do you want to get well? First of all, a couple things about this phrase, this question. The word get well means made whole. It's not just get over the sickness and get better and stop coughing or stop having the weakness that's in those legs. It's made whole, put together, almost like reconstructed. The things that have been broken are now healed, and it's holistic. The salvation of Jesus in the Gospels is always holistic. It's always about putting the whole person back together. I mean, think about the relationships that are broken in this person's life, not just his body. The other piece of this is that this question is posed to the man in what we would call the middle voice. In other words, made well is not something that he can do for himself, get better on my own, make myself better. Do you want to make yourself better? That's not how Jesus puts it. It's not the action of the man to make himself better, but neither is it this passive verb where it's just like he's going to lie on his mat until something happens to him. It's the middle voice. It's something that happens to you, but you're participating in it. You're allowing it to happen. It's the same kind of language that Paul uses in Romans chapter 12. Be transformed. You're participating in something that you can't do on your own power, and God wants to pour the power, but you're participating. You're welcoming. You're inviting. You're letting it happen. There's agency. And this is what's happening here. It's the middle voice. It's like Jesus is inviting him to participate. But here's the thing. What are the responses that we give to Jesus when we think about our own change and our own desire to be different. So if you think about the original question to begin the day, what in your life would you like to be different? What would you like to see changed in your life? When you think about that, what are some of the things that you have said to Jesus in response? Maybe you haven't struggled for 38 years. Maybe it's been 3. Maybe it's been 10. Maybe it's been 18. Maybe it has been 38. But here's the thing that is, just like the man, we can get used to having this mat. We can get used to this thing. This becomes a part of our life. Oh, this sickness is now who I am. My identity gets wrapped up in the things that I can't do, in the kind of thing that I'm holding on to. Whether it's the bitterness, it's difficult to let go of bitterness. I've become accustomed. I'm used to this bitterness. I'm used to this cynicism. I've grown accustomed to this addiction. This relationship of dysfunction, I don't know. I have figured out how to do drama. I can do drama. And some of us are just like comfortable. We've come to this place of being able to just go, well, this is just kind of who I've become. And so maybe we even give some of the questions like this man gives the questions. I don't know how to be different. This is just the way I was brought up. I've tried to be different, but it works for other people, but it doesn't work for me. I'm too stressed out and anxious to be thinking about what I need to change. I want to be whole, but I can't even imagine what it would look like for me to be whole. It doesn't matter. I've said prayers. Nothing's happened. God must not want me to change. So we've become comfortable staying in this place of bitterness or cynicism or addiction or drama with the relationships. You know how to do life with your baggage, so you continue to carry it. Even as Jesus stops, and just as he did with the man, sees him and sees you. Here's the thing about Jesus. Everyone else is just scurrying about the festival. Jesus stops and sees the man, notices the man. And today, that's part of the good news that we have, is that Jesus stops. Jesus sees us. And while we are powerless, Jesus is powerful. So when Jesus stops to say, do you want to get well? How will we answer? Perhaps Jesus is driving at something deeper here to our desires. Perhaps this is more about what we want and what we will. I mean, the word want to get well here, want goes with will, it goes with the desire. I was talking about this phrase just a few weeks ago with a couple of my colleagues, J.P. Conway and Josh Strahan at Lipscomb. And Josh put me onto this quote in C.S. Lewis's book, Mere Christianity. It's his chapter on sexual morality. And Lewis writes, before we can be cured, we must want to be cured. It is easy to think that we want something when we don't really want it. A famous Christian long ago, I think it was Augustine, told us that when he was a young man, he prayed constantly for chastity. But years later, he realized that while his lips had been saying, O Lord, make me chaste, his heart had been secretly adding, but please don't do it just yet. And there's something in that prayer that resonates with us. I want it someday. James K.A. Smith, who wrote a tremendous book, You Are What You Love, reminds us that new information about things are not enough to change our lives. He says, have you ever had the experience of hearing this incredibly good sermon, this powerful thing, and you think in the moment when you're hearing the sermon, I'm going to change that. You've got the piece of information, but it doesn't really even stick into Monday evening, and by Tuesday, it's gone. Smith writes, "What if instead of starting from the assumption that human beings are thinking things, we started from the conviction that human beings are first and foremost lovers? What if you are defined by what you know, not by what you know, but by what you desire? What if the center and the seat of the human person is found not in the regions of the intellect, but in the gut-level regions of the heart?" Maybe this is what Jesus is thinking when he stops and he sees the man and he looks at the man and he says, "Do you want to get well? Do you want this?" So Smith's point is that the great and powerful and formative motivation of our way of life comes primarily from what we most desire, from what we want. And so Jesus is asking the base question. I will say this, that one of the most consistent personal prayers in my life over the last several years has been, "God, change the desire of my heart. Transform my wants. Transform my will." I think about Paul in Philippians chapter 3 when he says, or chapter 2, when he says, "Work out your salvation with fear and trembling, for it is God who works in you to will and to act according to his good purpose." The power of God is not just in us to change behavior, which is what most of us think about when we think about becoming like Jesus. We think about the behaviors, we think about the actions, but Jesus is diving deeper into this man's will, into our desires. So consider the question, do you want to get well? Secondly is this, will you obey Jesus? That is, will you submit to Jesus in trust that he can make you well and whole? Because Jesus says to him, "Get up, take up your mat, and walk." And this is an act of obedience. This is where, in this middle voice, now he has the agency, he has the ability to say, "Okay, yes or no. Yes, I will stand up. Yes, I will take this mat, this thing that I have held on for so long, that I've become accustomed to, and I will walk. I will no longer sit on this thing. It's time for it to go." What is it for you? What represents the mat for you? What represents the thing that you need to give up? What represents the thing that you want Jesus to take from your life? And are you willing, if you say that you want to get well and to be made whole, if you want things to change in your life, are you willing to obey? Obedience is not some tricky way that God makes us do it on our own. And I think that for many of us, when we hear the word obey, there's this little pushback that says, "Well, I don't want to do it that way." It almost, for some, obedience it sounds like legalism. But obedience is this trust that Jesus, you can do what I can't do. The gospel is not God helps those who help themselves. The gospel is God helps those who can't help themselves. God helps those who cry out to him to do in them what only God can do. Do you want to get well? And are you willing to act in faith that the ways of Jesus, his power, his holiness, his love, his mercy, his justice, can and will heal you and change you and make you whole? What does it mean for you today to pick up your mat, to say, "I'm willing to take that step"? The step may be a simple prayer like, "Change my desire. Give me the desire to have the desire." It could be confessing that to somebody else. It could be as simple as responding right now in prayer. I'll invite our prayer teams to go ahead and take their places around the auditorium. And I will lead us in a prayer, and then we'll come back in just a moment after we sing. As we sing this song, this is a song that reminds us that our lives are not built on our ability to change and to overcome. How many of us have tried on our own, with our own willpower, to change before, and we haven't done it? This is what recovery ministry is about. I spent years in recovery ministry. I went through an entire year of doing a 12-step study. And what I was seeing in that and what I was reminded of as I spent time in this community of people in recovery is that we have to start with the very first step of admitting that we are powerless against the things that have held us back. And that there's only one higher power, Jesus Christ, who can break in to make us whole. So let's stand together, let's sing, let's declare our trust in the one who can make us whole. And if you would like prayer, please make your way to one of our prayer teams at this time.